It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kick start it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, lads and lasses of all ages, welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, February 20th, 2024, and it is time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 297 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I am your humble host, Maction, and I am joined by my friend, my buddy, my pal, a connoisseur of comedy, not just the first option, but the best option, Mr. Lom Galuka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. And for the next hour, we are going to bring you topics ranging from gaming news to history to trivia, lawsuits, and everything in between. But first, before we get started on that, Mr. Nice Guy, I have to know, it's been a couple of weeks since we were together.
Yeah.
How you doing, man?
Dude, I'm doing really, really well. It was a long weekend. President's Day was on Monday. And so, I legitimately didn't do anything. No soccer this weekend. No plans. Like, just kind of vegged and watched some movies on the Plex server. Watched some Walking Dead, Dead City. I guess I should save that for later. But also, Mac, I got a couple cool things in the mail that I want to spend just a couple seconds talking about.
Please.
Evens or odds, Mac, to decide which one
odds
I talk about first?
Because it's an odd day.
Okay, so odds. The first thing that I got, and people who watch at home are going to think, Mr. Nice Guy, do you really need any more gaming gadgets? And the answer is yes. I needed one more, and now I think I have all the gaming gadgets I need. And so I got myself, as kind of a late birthday present, one of these bad boys.
Oh, you got an analog pocket?
I got the analog pocket, and I was debating between the black one and the white one. The white one just looks so crispy clean. So I got the white one, and I've been playing old cartridges. And Mac, nice. We'll talk about this later, but I just want to say, this has totally like reinvigorated my retro gaming side. And reminded me, you don't always have to play the new stuff. You can play Zelda Oracle of Ages. You can play the old carts from your childhood and just enjoy that without having to always be playing the fancy new stuff. I won't go into all the features this thing has, but it has a lot of different screen types in terms of color, in terms of resolution. It has 10 times the pixels of the original Game Boy. And it plays Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, and Game Boy cards without the additional things. So that was number one, Mac. And then number two, and then I want to hear about your week, is I got this bad boy in the mail. And this is something that's for both of us. Now, it's probably showing up backwards in the chat, but this is the podcast award trophy for 2023. I have 2021 here as well. Mac has 2022 at his house. So that means next year, if we win again, you know, Mac will get 2024 at his house. So that's it for me, Mac. I want to hear about your week, and I want you to take your time telling me about it, because you did some awesome stuff, right?
So much awesome stuff. Although, to be fair, it was mostly all about the nerd next door, who was delivering a presentation at Life, the Universe, and Everything, which is a fantasy and sci-fi author convention.
Nice.
In Provo, Utah. We went there. Nerd Next Door delivered one presentation and one panel on sci-fi stuff, you know, very much inside of their wheelhouse, talking about the science behind sci-fi stuff. And it was well attended with a lot of people there.
That's awesome.
Just a lot of love. But also, it did serve as a little bit of a reunion of sorts, because several names that you might know from Ishmobile,
nice,
Pocket Dragon, Manatee Time, all these people actually came out, and we got together up in Provo and hung out.
Nice.
Good food, good times, good games. While it was all about Nerd Next Door, There was also a heck of a lot of fun in it for me. And then, of course, there was all of the other things. There was like a some amount of tabletop role-playing interest at this convention.
Love it.
And so there was a brand new tabletop RPG system that launched there at the event.
No way.
And yeah, and Ishmobile and I got a chance to, you know, to play it. And try it out, and even had like a one-on-one with the dev, and
that's
we
dope,
talked
dude.
About design sensibilities and like, oh, this is what's going on, and you know, and then of course just met a whole bunch of really cool like-minded people all over the place. So it is one of those things that was just. It was even better, I would say, than a general run-of-the-mill fan-related convention, because, like, everybody was there, and most of the people there were, like, content makers themselves.
Sure.
So, like, you know, because they're authors, or in some cases, other podcasters. So it was really fun, and a lot of us had the same sorts of reasons for being there. And all fantasy and sci-fi related, you know, my people, as it were. So it was good times.
Love to hear it. Now, I'm curious, because when I think Provo, the first food that comes to my mind immediately, I wonder if you can guess, Mac. What do you think?
J-Dogs, wasn't it?
Yeah, dude. Did you happen to have J-Dogs while you were there, or was it more like you guys were making awesome food together? What type of good food did you eat with your fellow nerds?
We didn't go to J-Dogs, but we did try a lot of real good places. Bombay House.
Ooh,
for example.
Okay. Nice.
That was good. Let's see. Pho Plus, I think, is another place there in downtown Provo. That was pretty good. Just a lot of good food, but we didn't make much ourselves. It was mostly, you know, we were bad. We ate out at restaurants or had takeout, and then
that's good.
Just
man.
Had a good time playing playing games and such.
Bombay House is so, so good. One of the first like birthday dates that I did with my wife was Bombay House, and their curry, their masuman, A+, really good stuff. I'm glad you got to have it.
I mean, hard to say anything more without just spending the entire hour talking about it, frankly, but lots of good presentations, lots of good times, and lots of good people.
Love to hear it. Love to hear it. Well, Mac, on that note, I say we do what we do best. And we hop right up in that gaming news, my friend. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. Mr. Nice Guy, I've been out of the loop. What is new in Vidya Gaming?
So, so much. And everybody who's here live, thank you so much for tuning in to episode 297 of Two Nerds in a Pod. And those listening after the fact, we appreciate y'all as well. Mac, this first news story comes from TheVerge.com, written by Tom Warren. And here's what he writes. Microsoft has been gradually moving Xbox away from the idea of a single piece of hardware in recent years, with ambitions to reach billions of gamers across consoles, PCs, and mobile devices. Now it's officially bringing 4 Xbox-exclusive games to PS5 and Nintendo Switch amid an Xbox Everywhere effort inside Microsoft that will likely see even more games arriving on rival consoles. It's a seismic strategy shift that the company is downplaying publicly. So the person who wrote this sat down with Microsoft CEO Phil Spencer to get some answers. We're not going to go through all of these, but here's some of the summary. He says, launching a few Xbox exclusives on rival consoles feels like the natural next step in Microsoft's grand plan, but it's also a risky one. It could undermine the Xbox hardware sales that support Microsoft's Xbox Game Pass subscription effort and its Xbox ecosystem, forcing Microsoft to go fully multi-platform and become a software-only games company like Sega. Shout out to Ralph for the tier one sub. We appreciate you, buddy. Mac, I gotta get your opinion. We don't know which 4 games are coming to Switch and to PlayStation. We know that it's not Starfield, and I really doubt that it's Halo. I'm thinking it's gonna be some mid-level games like Sea of Thieves, stuff like that. Probably not Gears of War. But what do you think about this strategy of Microsoft going multiplat, but also continuing to make hardware at the same time? Because to me, that's the key.
To be fair, Mr. Nice Guy, I think you've presented very compellingly in the past that it is software that's going to drive hardware sales, sure, especially, you know, with consoles. And it seems like maybe this is undercutting that. And from a business standpoint, it doesn't seem to bode very well for Microsoft's future in continuing to produce that hardware, those consoles. But from a gamer perspective, from our side, I mean, more content across multiple platforms means, for theoretically speaking, better experiences for us, more opportunities to play with friends or to even just experience those things. Now, I think it's fair to say that Sony has been the one with the best exclusives for quite some time.
Agree.
And so it would be very nice to have more of those Sony exclusives, but hey, I'll take wins where we can get it.
The interesting thing is, Sony, they're still exclusive, but they've started to have like almost unannounced timed exclusivity, where stuff comes out on the PS5 and then, you know, 2 years later, 3 years later, or in the case of a game I'm going to talk about in a little bit, day of, they have started to have that stuff on PC. Now, we're not seeing it on Xbox and on Switch, but we are starting to see it on PC with some cross-platform. So we'll talk about that in a minute. My prediction for this whole Microsoft thing is they maybe make one more console. And then I really think that they go the route of Sega. I think that they, in fact, let me retract that. They make one more home-based console, and then they either move into the PC gaming handheld space, like the Steam Deck, and they just say, hey, you don't even got to buy the software in physical form. Just buy your Game Pass subscription and you're good to go. But I don't see them making another Xbox after next gen. They have maybe one more gen of Xbox, and then I think they move on, because they want it to be Xbox everywhere. They want it to be Microsoft everywhere. There's really no reason for them to invest in hardware that doesn't give gamers some other type of option that they need. And I get they have quick resume. They have some features that are kind of cool. But my Xbox collects dust. Mm. And I love Halo. I love some of those games. I just don't see them being console sellers in the future. Mac, we got some good comments in the chat, though. What are people saying? Or did you have another comment yourself?
Yeah, just one thing. If they continue to maintain the Game Pass as they're going, that could still potentially keep them in games, as it were, and keep them relevant in games even without a console, because presumably, you know, even though this Microsoft owned IP is going to be available on PlayStation or on Switch, you're still going to have to buy that independently.
Yeah, good point.
At that point, the Game Pass just kind of becomes your PC-based subscription service, which, you know, almost seems like a step back into what they know best,
right,
and have been doing for quite some time. So anyway, it seems a shame, though, just my take. As to the people here with us, Galvatron is somewhat skeptical of Microsoft and says they know they will never beat Sony and Nintendo in hardware. This non-exclusivity would not be happening if Microsoft were the dominant player in gaming. And yeah, it does seem like Galvatron's repeated claims in the past of Microsoft wanting out of the hardware business might in fact be coming to fruition. Ishmobile says, so in the world of consoles, people who used to buy PlayStation and Xbox can just spend that combined on a better PC and play them there. A little bit tongue-in-cheek, but not entirely without merit there. But it is true, and Ishmobile is definitely a hardware guy, so he does rightly point out that in the past, the price of consoles were generally less expensive than a PC of similar power. But when you're talking about dividing your paycheck between two different consoles, that certainly hurdle can be overcome by just focusing on a PC of solid power instead of the console side.
And it would be super interesting for us to look at, you know, outside of Nintendo, like the Sony and the Xbox exclusives, and what percentage of them could be played via PC. Because we know we can play The Last of Us on PC. We know that we can play Gears of War via PC Game Pass. You know, Halo is free on PC, the multiplayer. So, I mean, so many of these games, even if they weren't, Horizon Zero Dawn, Ratchet and Clank, even if they weren't originally released on PC, now we're seeing so many of them there or available there. And on that note, I want to talk about a new game that has just come out, and I'm curious from the chat if y'all have heard of this game, if you're interested in playing it, because I want to get into this. Helldivers 2. This is by on IGN.com, written by Adam Bankhurst. Helldivers 2 devs temporarily cap concurrent players, he writes. Helldivers 2 developer Arrowhead Game Studios has temporarily capped concurrent players at 450,000 to help with server stability as it works to get the ceiling raised and fix other issues related to its immensely successful launch. By the way, this was written on February 18th. Arrowhead took to the Helldivers 2 Discord to share the news, saying it's working around the clock to solve the problems players are running into. Quote, "Hello, divers. Earlier tonight we had server-related issues with a concurrent player spike," Arrowhead wrote. "This led to some mission payouts failing, some players being kicked to their ships, or being logged out. Our team is working around the clock, etc., etc., and that's why they've capped it at 450,000. Mac, the reason this is a news story is because this is a PlayStation-exclusive game that also launched on PC day and date. And it's gotten a lot of hype. It's four-player co-op. It's getting really, really good vibes and really, really high review scores. 9 from IGN, 9 from Game Informer. I was watching and reading those reviews earlier. We talk about Microsoft going multiplat eventually, but what do we think about the benefits of just going multiplat day of?
Is this a trick question, Mr. Nice Guy?
It's not a trick question, and maybe we should say, what are the disadvantages of going multiplat day of? Because clearly, very successful in this instance. That's working out for Sony pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, let's talk disadvantages. I'm gonna, gotta close these eyes. Your game onto two different platforms at the same time means you're going to need some more people running two different forks of the same software. I don't know how different, not being a programmer for game consoles, I don't know how different a game's programming has to be to work properly both on PlayStation as well as PC. But I suspect I suspect there are nuances that maybe need to be seen to.
You know, in terms of servers and things like that, this game is cross-play, so you can play it with your friends.
Yeah.
It is not cross-progression, but you can play and communicate with people who are on the PlayStation 5 and on the PC together. I'm never a fan of dividing resources day one. You know, to your point, I want to make sure that I'm getting the best product possible. And obviously, it looks like with Helldivers 2, this is a masterclass in how you do release a game on both places day and date, because it's done really well. It hasn't been buggy. The issue has been that it's just been too popular and that it's sold really, really well and that people are really enjoying it, which is obviously a great problem to have.
Yeah.
The one concern I could see is just the nuances that come between playing on PC with a mouse and keyboard versus playing on a controller. And we see that with Call of Duty. It's not as relevant here because this is a co-op game and they've said they won't have PvP. It's just going to be strictly PvE and co-op type gameplay. But I guess just making sure that everyone can have a positive experience day one when you choose to release on multiple different platforms, where one of those platforms is PC and the other one is a console. And that's really all I could say that could be a potential negative. I've been reading about this. I was texting with Spenis earlier trying to convince him to buy it. I messaged Ruckus. I'm trying to convince him to pick it up because it's not a game you really want to play by yourself. So shout out to Helldivers 2. I'm excited to see how big this game gets. Last story I want to share, Mac, because we all love when people legally and ethically are able to hack stuff. This is on GameSpot.com by Darren Bonthuys. I think I pronounced that correctly. Sony's PlayStation Portal handheld is designed to stream games from your PS5, but that hasn't stopped Google engineers from hacking the device to run emulated PSP games. Google security engineer Cal Svensson and cloud vulnerability researcher Andy Wen showed off some of their work on X/Twitter, revealing a PlayStation Portal running the PSP version of Grand Theft Auto 3 through the PSP emulator. Wen added in a second tweet that the hack is entirely software-based, allowing the engineers to exploit vulnerabilities in the handheld without needing to change its hardware. Don't expect this hack to go public, as he says there's currently no plans to release it, and they have a lot more work to do. Mac, I'm curious. You own a piece of hardware that's meant to stream, strictly meant to stream. I'm going to ask you to use your imagination here. Someone says they can hack that hardware. What capabilities do you want to be added? And the reason I ask is because I have so many things that can do emulation. Like, yes, this is very, very cool, but I have no shortage of ways that I can emulate. Like, I'm curious, like, whether software or hardware based, what type of hacks would you like to see from hardware in the future? Whether handheld or otherwise.
I'd like to see some solid Wii emulation, I think would be fun. Like the motion controls.
And for me, that's a similar thing is, like, I think about how awesome the PlayStation Portal is. And and also how awesome, excuse me, not how awesome the PlayStation Portal is, but how awesome the DualSense controller is. It has haptic feedback. You know, when you're pulling a trigger, it vibrates based on how much that gun would vibrate. There's a lot of really cool features, and I would love to see those features put into games that are not intended for PlayStation. You know, whether it's Halo, whether it's Gears of War, whether it's something that's on PC that I can play on my Steam Deck but doesn't have that haptic feedback, I would love for these hackers to be able to give me the ability to feel that haptic feedback and take advantage of that controller in other areas. So now that it's been hacked once, I think the sky's the limit. I'm excited to see what they come up with. And that has been our news for the week.
All right. Well, now we look into the past for a little bit of video game history. And Mr. Nice Guy, the past couple of weeks have been some really good weeks for video games. I think it's only fair that we start back in 1990 with the release of Super Mario Bros. 3 for the NES.
Nice.
We had to wait quite a while to get our hands on this. Japan got it, you know, well more than a year before us, but we eventually got it. We just had to salivate at its surprise release in the movie The Wizard.
Yep.
Tease that we got there. A fantastic game. It's really hard to know what to say about a game like that that's so very iconic and brought so much more to the board with respect to, you know, how it changed things. Even just a simple thing like scrolling, diagonal scrolling as you went, instead of, you know, Mario 2, where you had, you know, screen wrapping on one side and then, of course, you know, up and down. But that sort of fluid combined, a HUD at the bottom of the screen that, frankly,
being able to have multiple items in your inventory.
Yes, indeed. And there were definitely some games throughout the course of the NES that brought each of those individual components, but bringing them all together at once, chef's kiss.
Beautiful game.
Absolutely fantastic. Let's see, we'll scooch a little bit farther forward to 1992, release for the arcade, Street Fighter II. Fantastic game. I was never really living close enough to an arcade until much, much later for me to burn all my allowance in quarters on a game like Street Fighter II. But when I got to university, I actually had a chance to run an arcade for a while. We had Street Fighter II. We had Lethal Enforcers. We had, of course, my favorite dancing games and a few other really good ones. But Street Fighter II, fantastic game, fantastic music, more so than anything else. But before I say more about that, Mr. Nice Guy, who is your main character in Street Fighter II?
Oh, it's Ryu, no question. It's Ryu, no question. Now, I mean, when I was a younger player, I would just spam the Hadouken. But, you know, once you get a little older, you learn how to do the Shoryuken, you know how to do the reverse kick. There's just so many great combos you can do with Ryu. Not a hard character to use. And even though he's identical to Ken, I feel like he's better than Ken in a lot of ways. So, Ryu. Or Ryu, as some would say.
Indeed. Well, I love Street Fighter 2. I think my favorite thing about it, though, is indeed the music. All of the music in that game, I believe with maybe one single exception, composed by Yoko Shimomura. She, an incredible composer, responsible for our favorites like Ryu's theme and especially Guile's theme, which we know goes with everything. She also responsible for Kingdom Hearts, Legend of Mana, and Super Mario RPG.
Wow.
Like, wow. Bangers. Every single one of the songs that she touches is, is certified gold as far as music goes. As far as video game music goes, rather. I know that we don't do, like, platinum records for video game music, but I would describe her as a multi-plat artist. For absolute sure. And, you know, when you hear that Guile's theme and how it goes with everything, you need to think about Yoko Shimomura and her contribution to video games. I guess lastly, Mr. Nice Guy,
yeah.
Released in 1997 for the Nintendo 64. And I'm going to ask you about your main choice of character. And
sure.
Of course, this question goes out to everybody listening now and everybody here in the chat with us live. Mario Kart 64, who are you playing? Who are you racing?
So I never understood the rationale of using Donkey Kong or Bowser because, yes, they have a higher top speed, but the acceleration is so slow. And in a game that is item-based, you know, you get hit and then you got to re-accelerate. You hit that top speed. If you mess up or you get hit, you got to re-accelerate again. So I was always a Yoshi guy. I feel like Yoshi is super balanced, decent power slide, above average power slide, and just the best all-around character in my opinion.
Fantastic choice. I feel like I tend to go with either Yoshi or Mario.
Nice.
I just feel like those tend to work out pretty well for me. Even to this day, Mr. Nice Guy, when we have friends over, I will absolutely crack out the 64 and Mario Kart 64. It just has such staying power and appeal.
I agree.
Even the long levels are not too frightfully long, and I think you can just really enjoy playing head-to-head with a lot of people and never really have to take it too seriously. But it wasn't always that way.
So I'm curious, for you and people in the chat, did you ever do that Rainbow Road trick in Mario 64 where you can jump off the edge at the very beginning and go over the edge and land like 3/4 of the way across the course?
I knew that that was an option, but I don't think I ever successfully pulled it off.
Super hard to do, but fun.
Yeah, but you've pulled it off?
I have pulled it off. And if you get stars, you can actually like do it all three laps and get a super good time. But it's very hard to land, but it's a fun trick, fun hack.
Fantastic. Well, that is just a few games that came out this last week in years before, but definitely excellent games. And we're grateful for what we have now in large part because of what we had then.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Indie Game of the Week, where we talk about a game that may deserve more attention and tell you whether or not it deserves your attention. And Mac, this one is kind of a unique game because I reached out to the dev. They did provide us with codes, which we appreciate, but they did provide us with codes for the demo, which is not something that we've typically done, reviewing demos of games, but we're going to do it today. We're going to give our thoughts unbiased. This week's game is Back to the Dawn. Link is in the chat. This is on Steam. Here's the description, etc., etc. You were framed and incarcerated. Learn to survive in prison. Explore every inch and exploit any weakness. Manipulate and scheme. Make friends or foes with fellow inmates, and with their help, break out of prison. This currently has a very positive rating on Steam with 3,041 reviews. This game is in early access, currently released on November 2nd, 2023. Developer Metalhead Games, publisher Spiral Up Games. and currently costs $19.99. Now, Mac, I have some strong opinions about this game or this demo that we tried. I want to hear your thoughts first. What did you think?
All right. Well, just to put it out there, in this, of course, as described, you're a character who's been wrongfully imprisoned, and there's a lot of stuff stacked against you. There is a certain degree of inventory management, time management, and frankly, kind of building up your way, you know, developing relationships, paying for things, getting things done. And there's a certain extent to which, and this is true in a lot of games of this style, where it's almost a sort of survival game where you have to actively engage because the options of maintaining are going to be slightly worse than status quo. So, like, for example, the food that you'll have as a free option in this situation isn't really going to sustain you. You
Right.
need to be bringing in money so that you can buy the better food in these situations.
Correct.
You need to be, you know, or like, for example, you'll be able to, you know, you'll have like some toothpaste, but that's only good for like 3 uses. So you're going to need more than that, and so on. There's a lot of that where I'm of two minds of that general thing, but you know, that's just a general design thing. But in this game, the whole point is to either buy legitimate or, and the game certainly seems to point you this direction, by less than kosher methods, get your way out of prison, maybe even by breaking out of prison through, well, like I said, various less than above board means. Mr. Nice Guy, I think I'm curious to hear what you thought.
So I like the idea of a choose your own adventure game,
mm-hmm.
right? And this is not, to be clear, I'm trying to think of how to describe this to those who are watching or listening later. It's not a text-based game. Like The Walking Dead, you move around a little bit, but a lot of it's point and click. This game gives you a lot more freedom. It's not on rails, but I would also say it's not necessarily quite open world because there are limitations.
Yeah, it has a lot more like a JRPG kind of feel.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you can walk around and you can choose who you want to talk to. There are different dialogue options. There's karma. There's, you know, building relationships with other prisoners. And so it's fairly open in that way. And if I was going to compare it to another game in that aspect alone, I'd almost compare it to like a Disco Elysium, for those of you that may have played that. In fact, you start out, and if I'm trying to remember, you know, you're a journalist, but you kind of get to pick your what's the word I'm looking for?
You kind of get to pick your specialty,
yeah.
your class, or some of your features and traits.
Yeah, exactly. And so in that sense, it means that the game has a lot of replayability because, number one, there's not infinite, but a lot of options in terms of who you talk to, what gang you join, you know, what gang missions you choose to do, you know, the different things that you're going to engage in, but also the strengths you have. And so if this is your jam, you're going to love this game because you're going to have many, many options of playing through this over and over again. The thing I don't like about the game is there was almost too much that you had to keep track of.
Hmm.
And if it wasn't a demo and I was more fully invested in it, I would probably have liked it more. But knowing that, okay, I'm not even really going to get to the end of this, you know, why am I keeping track of all the items in my inventory and who likes me and who doesn't and what quests I'm working on? So that was frustrating. Now, as part of a whole, I think that this is a really, really well-made game, even if it wasn't necessarily my jam. If this is your thing, this is your thing,
yeah.
and you'll like it.
As somebody who does and has enjoyed in the past many a JRPG, I can appreciate a lot of games to an extent. I do like to feel a bit more like I'm making more progress in a game. Even early on, I like to feel like I'm making a bit more progress. This one was a little bit rough for me. I didn't care much for that, for the progression. And then it was rough because we had no idea going in where the demo stopped.
Yeah.
And there was this thing where, like, the idea that I got, because it said, oh, hey, look, here's a special item in the demo. Or there were things where it's just like, this area isn't ready for demo use, so you can't explore this option. I legitimately thought going in and kind of paced myself accordingly that, like, that is what the demo meant, was that there weren't options. But when we got to a specific time frame and the demo ended, I found myself a little bit frustrated because I was like, I probably would have played more risky if right. I had known that that was going to be the thing. Or maybe I would have, tried a whole bunch of times. But I understand the desire not to let a couple of schlubs like us, talk too much about something and throw us the demo. But real talk, though, yeah. I mean, it is a game that I think shows promise.
I agree.
And I think with more time, I probably would have enjoyed it a bit more, but I felt like just as soon as I was starting to recognize the mechanics and understand what to keep track of and what to not worry about, was when it was done. And so that was my experience.
Yeah, and we should also mention there's a day by day system. Like it tracks your time, right? And so the goal is to escape prison within a certain number of days, and the demo did not allow you to get through all of those days. Understandably, it's a demo.
Yeah.
With a demo and with the early access game, I don't want to say anything too definitive because it is a work in progress. I think it's a really well-made game that has room for improvement. Not my jam, but I appreciate what they're trying to do. And I appreciate the demo code, so thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's been it.
Well, now let's turn to a game that's trying to get off of the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart. I've posted a link in the chat, and we're going to take a look at this, discuss some of the virtues, some of the vices, and at the end, say whether or not we think it should be kickstarted or kicked out of here. Now, this little game is named Rollin' Rascal. But let's be perfectly honest, this is basically Sonic Heroes. With the exception that instead of having a team of, Sonic, Knuckles, and Tails, you just have the Rollin' Rascal, just the one. Now, there is a sort of battle feature where you can go head-to-head racing with other players, but that's more of a competitive rather than a cooperative thing. Of course, to be fair, in Sonic Heroes, you didn't really get to have three players. It was just one player with, you could swap out the others. But you can very much see see the stuff here, and they do highlight that the inspiration is there, and they're not cagey about, oh, well, we came up with this. It's like, no, Sonic is a game that we love, and we feel like we need more 3D Sonic.
Yeah.
So this game was looking for $50,000 to meet its goal. It is blown well past that. It's at over $125,000 now, and still climbing, as it still has 15 days left to go. It may wind up meeting some of its larger stretch goals, which would be, alternate characters and character customization and such. But it looks like it's definitely going to keep going there. Now, there is a little bit about price and delivery date that I think we can talk about some more. But Mr. Nice Guy, having taken a look at this now for the first time, anything particular stand out to you?
So first of all, this looks really, really beautiful. I like what they're trying to do. Looking at the online multiplayer part of the video, it looks like, I can't remember the name of the game right now, but there was a battle royale, and someone in the chat would know, where you're racing other people.
Fall Guys?
Yes, Fall Guys. Yeah, good job. You read my mind. Where you're racing people and there's obstacles and you're trying to bump each other off. And it, the multiplayer kind of gave me that vibe, which I think is a good thing. It's going to be successful for that reason. I also like that this isn't just a one-dimensional run really fast and platform type of game. I like that there's a competitive aspect. Just at first glance, this looks extremely polished. Do we know if these folks have made anything in the past?
So
I'm trying to pull that up.
Yeah, I don't believe that this crew has done a Kickstarter before. No, Curio-matic, this is their first Kickstarter project. Although, as I'm looking through the team here, I didn't notice anybody saying that they had things in others.
No, and that's okay. I was just curious because this doesn't look like a game that is made by first-time developers. It looks extremely polished. Now, the thing that worries me is, will there be a big enough community for online to actually have a community? Or will it die? And then also, will there be servers that are maintained? You know, when you say that you need 50,000 for a Kickstarter, but there's online multiplayer and it's your first attempt, I hope that you've estimated how much it costs to maintain servers for long enough for people to enjoy the game. Those are my only holdups.
So Ishmobile is coming in clutch with the relevant blurb. Curio-matic is a studio that has partnered with numerous indie devs over the last several years to help bring their visions to life, whether that be through promotional art or in-game asset production. Our team and company have grown steadily, and we're now at a point where we're ready to create our own original game.
Nice.
So yeah, it does seem like it's their first go.
Started from the bottom, and now we're here. I love these types of stories.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited to see what they do. Now, Mac, I think you were going to mention price and delivery date, right?
Indeed, yes. So there was an option for Early Bird, which it has sadly passed, but the option for getting in for a copy of the game now is $25. Now, like you said, it does have a lot of polish, and there are some levels that it demonstrates inside of the preview there on Kickstarter that are a slightly less polished. The platforms are there, the working pieces, the set pieces are there, but the backgrounds and things haven't been fully realized. And they do briefly show a sort of pan across a whole bunch, like a world map, giving the notion that there's going to be thematic areas inside of it. So it does seem like while they've got the bones there, that there's still a lot of work left to be done. And so it may or may not surprise to hear that the delivery date is supposed to be July of 2026.
Okay.
Which is a little ways off, more than 2 years. Obviously, I'm no stranger to Kickstarters that take a little while. None of us are. But I don't know. Could this be a situation where they're being overly cautious and projecting it out farther, knowing the Kickstarter curse of it always taking more time than you expect? I'd like to think so. But at the outset, if a project is like more than 2 years out, and I automatically, my mind fills in, add an extra 6 months, you know, to release, to me, I feel like this means quarter one, 2027. And that's a bit of a stretch even for
right,
me.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so I will say the name of this game that I kickstarted in 2018 that I still have not received, Hazelnut Bastille. I put $15 into it. It's a Legend of Zelda Link to the Past type of game. And I still haven't gotten it, and they barely ever give updates. And so on the one hand, I like that this company is being self-aware and saying, hey, games take a while to make. But I also have seen firsthand that once people have the money in pocket, sometimes they just kind of take their time making the game, and if they think it's going to take two, it takes four. If they think it's going to take one, it takes three. So I guess I would hate to see that happen here. And that's really all I have to say about that.
Well, with some slight trepidation, we do have to still take a look at this on the merits, and one of the things that I have always harped on is about the playable demo. Show all you want. You know, well, I mean, like, there's tell. A Kickstarter page is like the telling. But the demo is the showing, and this right. game does, in fact, have a playable demo. Now, even in spite of that, not quite enough to not make me concerned at least a little bit about the very far away release date. But a rushed game, you know, versus a game that you take all the time in the world, I hope it gets released better. I hope it gets released sooner. But nonetheless, give it a look. I think, Mr. Nice Guy, I think I'm going to say kick on this point. I don't think a $25 price point for something that's 2.5 to 3 years out is enough of an incentive to not just let me buy it at the outset when it comes out and it's ready.
I 100% kick this one. 2 years is just too far, and I think that people don't realize if you are paying yourself, which I believe you should do along the way, the longer it takes to make the game, the more your expenses.
Yes. It's good to know that they've got a running demo now, but 3 years, yeah. So here's to hoping that however much money they get winds up sustaining them, that this game gets made, but I feel like these compounding factors just a bit too much. And Mr. Nice Guy, I think it's always proper and appropriate to bring up that games take money to make and you've got to fund that. And the longer it goes, the more it costs.
Well, cool.
So that has been Kick or Kickstart.
Fantastic. Well, let's keep things moving with Nerdflex.
Oh, woo-hoo.
A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the hosts. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. And if you're here live, you have a job to do. Get a gaming related multiple choice question in the chat. Mac and I will use nothing but our noggins to try to answer. And Mac, we already have one. I'm going to read this one. Actually, you know what? I'll let you read this one. And I'll pull some others. But go ahead, Mac.
All right. Ishmobile asks, when on the ship in The Secret of Monkey Island, which of the following ingredients is not used in Threepwood's spell? Is it A, an ink bottle, B, the Jolly Roger flag, C, a rubber chicken with a pulley in the middle, or D, monkey's blood?
Dude, that's a good question. And have you played this game?
So I started playing Secret of Monkey Island. I regret to say that that this is one of those LucasArts games, point-and-click LucasArts games, that escaped me for a while, with the exception of the Monkey Island games. Also Dig, or was it Loom? You know what? There's some stuff I need to do. I still have some holes in my LucasArts point and clicking to do, and this is one of them. I feel I lean toward monkey's blood being not used in the spell.
Two on the nose, right?
Yeah, exactly. While that is wild, that is just wild enough to be a part of it. But
wildly
monkey's blood
specific.
Does seem.
Yeah.
Yeah, monkey's blood does seem to be there. Although, to be fair, I can see every one of these things being actual items in the game.
I agree.
So,
but I agree. Let's go with monkey's blood. It almost seems too obvious, and maybe it is, but we'll find out in a minute. Ishmobile, we're going to go with D, final answer. Let us know in the chat if that is correct, my friend.
D, monkey's blood. We nailed it.
Nice.
While the recipe calls for 2 pints, Guybrush replaces it with very fine wine. So, nice. Not too bad,
like
Mr.
That we got
Nice
it right.
Guy. High five.
Boom. Had a 25% chance, and hey, we got it. Well, moving on to our next question, we're going to take one from the test bank here. And Mac, these are randomly chosen. Here is the question. It's a Mario question. What letter appears on Donkey Kong Jr.'s shirt? Now, there's only 26 options.
Yeah. Does Donkey Kong Jr. have another name?
He does not, that I know of.
I guess there's D, K, J, and R seem like the things. I would lean more toward J, like a lowercase J.
I was leaning towards J as well, and I'm trying to envision it. I cannot, but I would go with J. I say we go J final answer.
J final answer.
Hey, and it was J, J for Junior.
Yes.
Simple.
2-4-2.
2-for-2.
Is anyone else with a question?
All right, here's one that I don't know. I didn't know the other one either. But here's one that will be interesting to learn the answer to. It's a Metal Gear Solid question. A Metal Gear Solid level pack was released for which PS3 user-generated platformer? A Metal Gear Solid level pack was released for which PS3 user-generated platformer? Now, I'm not sure if I'm understanding the question, but I have an idea of what it might be.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand the question either. We've got a user I don't even know.
Yeah, so when I think of games on the PS3 and otherwise that potentially would have had a level pack added or a mod, I think of Little Big Planet. Because I know that Little Big Planet allows for a lot of custom user-generated content. But I'm also trying to figure out if this question is saying that the platformer itself was user-generated and then the level pack was made.
Interesting.
But I'm going to go with Little Big Planet 3 is my thought.
Okay.
Or maybe Little Big Planet 2. I'm trying to remember which one was on PS3.
There was a game for the PS3 that was all about like user-generated content. Was it Dreams?
Dreams. It was Dreams, yeah. But I feel like that was on the PS4, actually. That was definitely on the PS4.
Okay.
Because I had the same thought, but it was PS4.
Okay, well, I'm 100% going to go with you. PlayStation, much more your bailiwick than mine. So, yeah, let's go with Little Big Planet.
Little Big Planet. Dude, we got it. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man.
It was legit Little Big Planet.
Mr. Dice Guy, I think you do not take a bow frequently enough for how often you just demolish these obscure video game questions.
I like PlayStation. What can I say?
You know, you deserve all the credit here. I would have never had a ghost of a chance. I would have been going for PS4 games, because that's what I know.
You're good. That has been Nerdflex.
Fantastic. Well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about JA versus Take-Two Games, and we talked about this in episode 290. And that episode might be worth a re-listen, because we won't cover all of it all over again. The short version here is that back in November, when we mentioned this case, we talked about how every year 2K puts out a new sports game, and they retire the old games, and the virtual currency you have inside of your digital wallet goes poof.
Yep.
Now, the plaintiffs, specifically a minor identified by the initials JA, and to be clear, this is kind of the person who would be the class representative, is trying to get a class action going by highlighting that what they are doing is, they say, basically theft. Well, Take-Two has responded to that, and it was a weak case. This is what I said. It was a weak case from the beginning, and it's not that much better now. But Take-Two has responded with some specific items. Very much equating to that virtual currency, as we all know, was a fiction created to put more money into the pocket of the video game maker. And this is I will just quote it. quote, licensor, Take-Two, has the absolute right to manage, regulate, control, modify, suspend, and or eliminate such virtual currency and or video game as it sees fit in its sole discretion, and licensor, that's us, of course, shall have no liability, licensor, that's them, shall have no liability to you or anyone else for the exercise of such rights, end quote. That's direct from the terms and service for this very game. And while it is new that, of course, they talk openly in their filing and in their response that virtual currency is a pure fiction that cannot be expected to be a stand-in for any kind of good or service, it is a little bit jarring, or could have been jarring to some, for them to hear that being said. Because it's not often the thing that's being said in the front of, you know, they very much dress it up like horse armor, right?
Right, right.
You know, you can get this cool things, this cool stuff. We don't want to talk about the fact that it is a absolute legal fiction created to take money from you, and that is okay. You know, that's not messaging isn't forward. They don't say it with their chest. Unless, of course, it's in a legal filing when somebody's trying to come at them for theft. But it is important just to keep in mind. So I reiterate what we said back in episode 290 and Mr. Nice Guy. We were both 100% on the same thing here that this wasn't going to go anywhere. It would not go the distance, and we wouldn't hear that much. And it is very likely that this will not survive the motion to dismiss, especially because of Take-Two bringing up this very compelling. Is it right? Probably not. But it is legalese.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in to episode number 297 of Two Nerds in a Pod. We're 3 episodes away from 300 episodes, Mac, which is wild to think about, but also very exciting. Before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool nerdy stuff we've been into across all platforms, whether it's Netflix, whether it's a Plex server, whether it's PlayStation, Xbox, or handheld, whether it's retro or whether it's new, and we're always looking for cool nerdy stuff to get into, so let us know in the chat what you've been watching and playing if you're here live. Mac, what have you been into the past couple weeks?
Well, it has been a whirlwind past couple of weeks. Some tabletop role-playing games, you know, some Dungeons & Dragons, of course, some little bit of GURPS. I've watched some movies, some of which I've had a chance to watch with friends. But as for playing and as for watching, I think there's just one thing that I have to talk about, and that really is I got Metroid Prime Trilogy for the Wii.
Yes.
When I've had the opportunity, I've been playing it. And I think that's part of why it was in my head that I would like the option to play it not in front of my television. I'm being spoiled by my Steam Deck. And so I kind of wish I had that as well. But yeah, Metroid Prime Trilogy on the Wii, I am enjoying it.
Love to hear it. Love to hear it. Well, at the front of the show, I talked about this Analog Pocket. If you're not familiar with this, and it's something that you really would be into, if you like the old school cartridges, do a Google, check out TikTok, check out YouTube, watch some videos. It's definitely not the cheapest piece of gaming equipment, but there's a lot of really cool features that just make your old school games come back to life. First game I popped into this bad boy, Mac, was Alfred Chicken.
Nice.
Which, in my opinion, one of the best hidden gems on the original Game Boy. I love, love, love that game. Great platformer. And, of course, Oracle of Ages, Game Boy Color, I've been playing as well. In terms of more modern stuff, I did actually hop into Metal Gear Solid 5, which is an older game, but I have on the PlayStation, and I wanted to get into it, so I played some of that. And then it's mostly legitimately been retro stuff, as handheld gaming is really, I think, the way of the future. In terms of watching, just finished watching The Walking Dead: Dead City, which features Maggie and Negan post the main show, and for the sake of time, you know, that's all I will really talk about. But Mac, what are people getting into in the chat?
Well, let's see. Rolf is talking about Gary Grigsby's War in the West, Enshrouded and Slay the Spire. Let's see. Ishmobile, the Ish Crew, is watching Stargate SG-1. Woohoo! The Dune movie that came out a few years ago, and The Singles Ward. And playing Destiny 2 and Secret of Monkey Island and that game that we tried for the first time at that thing, Arium, Arium, I think is the proper way to say it. And yeah, that looks to be about what people are offering in the chat this time around.
Nice.
But good stuff. Oh, and Robo Ridley's been playing never-ending League of Legends and has been playing some Mega Man 9 back on that Mega Man 9 grind, as well as Dragon Quest 11, and has been reading Haunted and Firen number 5. That sounds interesting and exciting.
Mac, I gotta ask you, as a major Mega Man fan, and with my newly reinvigorated love of the original Game Boy, having this analog pocket, have you played any of the Game Boy Mega Man?
Yes, I have played 2 and 3, I want to say.
So did you know that Mega Man 5 on the Game Boy is a completely original game?
Yes, with those completely original robot masters named after planets, right?
Yeah, all of the other ones on the Game Boy are a mix of the NES and some new stuff, but Mega Man 5, completely original game, the more you know. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to episode number 297 of Two Nerds in a Pod. We appreciate you. We'll be back next week, same bat place, same bat time. Be excellent to each other. Video games are art. See y'all later. Bye.
Bye.